Hello, and welcome to the BCMA podcast. Allow me to briefly introduce myself. My name is Adrian Parody, and I've been a contract communications assistant for the BCMA since October of last year. I've had a ton of fun since starting out, helping out to promote the BCMA's various communication channels and to provide the best information series possible for our members. We'd like to welcome you all now to a new year. We're back from a much appreciated break and are ready to take on 2019 with a newfound enthusiasm. To start things off right, we are continuing our two-part series of revisiting recorded highlights from our conference last year held in Kelowna over 3 days in October. While we were fortunate enough to enjoy so many amazing talks and discussions from museum professionals from around the province, one peak moment for us was Megan Richardson, the director of the Virtual Museum of Canada. Her keynote speech on sector-wide gaps of digital literacy skills rings true for museums both large and small, and is equal parts inspiring and practical. Megan Richardson has spent her career creating and supporting connections amongst people and museum collections. After establishing the education program at the Canadian Museum of Contemporary Photography, Megan moved to the National Gallery of Canada, where she was a manager and then head of education. She introduced the gallery's first collection app, a national online teen art contest, and the distance learning program. She also revitalized the flagship family program and oversaw on-site and online interpretation for major international temporary exhibitions. Megan is currently the director of the Virtual Museum of Canada, a national digital cultural investment program managed by the Canadian Museum of History. She is responsible for the annual calls for investment, dozens of projects in development, and the program's website. Megan is leading the VMC's renewal, an intensive three-step process to better meet the needs of Canadian museums and heritage organizations. So whether you missed the 2018 conference or just want to relive a part of it, we now present you with Megan Richardson.
Picture, if you will, a smallish museum in a Canadian town. The same dedicated group of volunteers has been helping to keep things going for years, and now they're working with a smart new curator who grew up in the area. In the summer, a couple of students join their ranks to help with the collection and run programs. Attendance is pretty steady, but it's mostly interested adults. Once kids get past the age for school and family visits, they don't really come back. The collections management system is older but still works well enough, and one of the students updated the website last summer, so it's clear and attractive. One of the volunteers used to work as a writer and likes computers, so she started doing some stuff on Facebook and Twitter and is gaining a modest following. The museum building was renovated a few years ago after a community-wide fundraising campaign, so it's in good shape. And the operating grant came through again this year, so the finances are stable for now. All in all, things are going pretty well. But there's a nagging suspicion that they could be better. Words like relevance and connection are being used at the board meetings. And because they try to keep up with what's happening in the wider museum community, and because it's 2018, the people who work at our museum think digital is something that they should be paying more attention to. But when? And how? Time and money are tight, and the skills in the team are low, though there's interest and lots of enthusiasm. And how do you find out what the possibilities are, let alone figure out who you could work with to make it happen? And then, what if you tried something and failed? And who out there is bold enough to actually innovate? Good morning, and thank you for inviting me to open the BCMA conference today in beautiful Kelowna, my first visit here. Before I begin, I'd like to thank West Bank First Nation Elder Pamela Barnes for her thoughtful and warm words of welcome, and acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Sioux Okanagan peoples. As David said, my name is Megan Richardson, and I'm the director of the Virtual Museum of Canada, an investment program managed by the Canadian Museum of History in Gatineau, Quebec. That slide is about to change for one that's much snowier and frostier looking. We're in the process of renewing the VMC and we have a fresh new mission statement, which is to help build digital capacity in Canadian museums and heritage organizations, and to give Canadians unique access to diverse stories. Each year, we invest up to $2.2 million, and we commit the expertise of the VMC team to support the development of online products designed to provide rich and engaging visitor experiences. Quick hands up if you've received VMC investment in the past or if you're currently working on a project with us. That's a good number. Okay, thanks. So in the past 6 months alone, 14 VMC-funded projects have launched on subjects as diverse as rowing, archaeology, eel fishing, architecture, biology, and art. So we have some experience with Canadian museums and heritage organizations, and with digital. We're at an incredibly exciting and challenging juncture in the history of museums. Technologies are changing fast, and they're opening up whole worlds of possibilities for museums in terms of research, documentation, interpretation, access, and engagement. At the same time, and not at all surprisingly, there are sector-wide gaps in digital skills and literacies. And this is an issue internationally. I'd like to draw your attention to a just published piece of research from the United Kingdom. The report is called Mapping the Museum Digital Skills Ecosystem. It's the first phase of the One by One project, a national digital literacy project for museums being led by Dr. Ross Perry from the School of Museum Studies at the University of Leicester. The report presents the findings of an extensive literature review and of a research team that visited a range of UK museums to find out how staff and volunteers are currently using digital technology and to investigate how demand for these skills is changing. The report has several big takeaways, and I'll just speak to a couple of them. The first is that despite 50 years of computer-enabled advancement and transformation in the way that museums work, the sector as a whole still lacks digital confidence. It still does not have the digital skills and literacies needed to meet it and its visitors' expectations. The report further finds that digital is increasingly seen as part of everyone's skill sets, and all roles have some kind of digital element. The report also, encouragingly, finds that museums are exploring, learning, and demanding new digital skills to help them innovate and create with digital. This in the report goes hand in hand with the findings that there is a deeper understanding by museums of the digital skills, knowledge, and expertise they need. And finally, there is evidence showing that the museum sector has the potential and the intention to adapt. So it's not exactly a good news story, but it's not all bad either. Museums are aware of the importance and potential of digital technologies and are moving towards their seamless integration in our work. This is a state that the report calls the post-digital. But we are not there yet. I call it a kind of digital adolescence. Closer to home, we see this state in our work at the Virtual Museum of Canada. Institutions have incredible collections and stories to tell, and loads of expertise in low-tech modes of presentation and interpretation, like exhibitions, publications, and public programs. But when it comes to the kind of digital skills needed to conceive and create an online visitor experience, we have noted a lack of knowledge, experience, or confidence, and sometimes all three. When you add to this the fact that the vast majority of Canadian museums and heritage organizations don't have in-house digital experts, let alone departments, this reality, by the way, is echoed in the UK report, you arrive at the most common solution that we see at the Virtual Museum of Canada, which is a project team made up of museum content and project management experts working with an external web developer. And don't get me wrong, Some remarkable online projects have been produced using this model, but it can mean that, to a significant extent at least, digital skills like writing for the web and user experience design, these types of skills can remain siloed and are lost when the project ends. The digital skills gap I'm referring to has also been noted right here in BC. 2 years ago, I was invited to a workshop in Vancouver to develop an outline and plan for a seminal education program in digital museum studies. The initiative was the result of a partnership between the BCMA and the Center for Digital Media in response to a need expressed by the BC museum and cultural sector communities for digitally, and I'll borrow a term from the British, upskilling their members in a formal way. I really like that word, upskilling. I use it a lot. It seems to resonate. It makes sense to me. The meeting in BC was a stimulating and intense discussion among experts from the education and glam sectors and the creative industries. Despite some early setbacks, the initiative is moving forward, and pieces are being put in place for a certificate in digital museum studies for cultural professionals, which is a first of its kind in the museum world. I'll share one last example to illustrate this state of digital adolescence we find ourselves in, and the need to support the community in building its digital capacity. 2 years ago, at the Museums and the Web Conference, two young women about to graduate with museum studies degrees from major American universities stood up at the Lightning Talks on Museum Practice session, and they shared their story. They talked about the roadblocks they encountered accessing the digital skills they needed, the solutions they found, and this is important to note, outside their master's programs, and their recommendations for, as they phrased it, more holistically incorporating digital skills into museum studies programs to better prepare students for real job opportunities that increasingly require tangible digital skills. To make their point, they put up a slide that juxtaposed digital course titles from actual museum studies graduate programs with digital skills requirements from actual museum job posters. And they posed the question, is there a skills gap? Which there most definitely was when you compared the two. So clearly, as a sector and internationally, museums currently have some challenges when it comes to digital. There are gaps in our digital skills and literacies, and our educational institutions and workplaces are not set up to fully address the issue, though important strides are being made and really good work is being done. I'm just going to speak to this very quickly because it's a very interesting recent report from Elon University. Who knew that Elon Musk had his own university, but he does. And the Pew Research Center, which you'll all know from the Pew Internet Trust, and they do a lot of research around web and digital. So Elon University and Pew Research Center got together and did this report called The Future of Well-Being in a Tech-Saturated World. It's a phenomenal read, it's a really good airplane read, and basically it's just a ton of quotations pulled together from experts around the world who are musing as to whether or not digital is a good, primarily a good thing for humankind or primarily a bad thing for humankind and how we can, you know, somehow manage that over the coming decades. So, in the spirit of that report, if we assume that digital is here to stay and that digital is more of a good thing than a bad thing for museums and indeed the rest of the world to engage in, we might ask ourselves the following questions. What can we do to keep building our digital skills and literacies? And looking at it through the lens of the conference theme, how can we innovate in this environment? At this point, I'd like to declare the position from which I come at this subject. I'd also like to offer a definition of innovation. In terms of my position, I mentioned it at the top, I'm a visitor experience expert. I'm not a technologist. This is significant for two reasons. It means that my perspective on digital and the majority of the examples that I use when I talk about digital come from the museum disciplines of education and interpretation and relate to the broader term of engagement. It also means that, like many, I struggle with the tidal wave of technological innovations. There is simply so much to read and to learn, and actually relatively few opportunities to see much of it in action. And digital is central to my job. For the majority of you, I'm guessing, it's only part of what you do and how you work. In terms of how we think about innovation in museums, I'll borrow from Haitham Eid of the Southern University at New Orleans, who said that innovation in museums, there is a slide missing. How did that happen? Okay, I'm just gonna say it out loud. Innovation in museums is about new or enhanced processes, products, or business models by which museums can more effectively achieve their social and cultural mission. I'll give it to you again because it's not on the screen. Innovation in museums is about new or enhanced processes, products, or business models by which museums can more effectively achieve their social and cultural mission. I'd like to propose another way of looking at the word innovation beyond this idea of the new or the enhanced. When the VMC conducted focus groups across Canada to get feedback on the new direction we were planning to go in, we defined innovation as something that is new for your museum or for the wider field. We intended the renewed VMC to foster and support this kind of innovation. This seemed to us a more scalable and achievable way of looking at innovation and a worthy way of investing public monies. Our research found that a focus on innovation can be seen as both motivating and, not surprisingly, intimidating. While a few museums expressed the desire to push themselves digitally, most did not want to compete head-on for funding with the most innovative museums in the country. Many focus group participants believed the VMC's focus should be on something they called digital success. They defined this as creating something new for their institution or repeating something that has worked in the past. This term, digital success, fits nicely within our discussion about skills and literacies and can be seen as an outcome of digital capacity building. Against this discussion of the current state of digital in museums, and bearing in mind my perspective as a museum professional and the definition of innovation I've proposed, I believe that there are a number of productive ways that museums can approach innovation and technology so they can keep themselves and the field progressing digitally. I'm going to touch on five key points. Number one, rethink your mission. Number two, see what others are doing. Number three, start small and right-size it. Another borrowed term from the British. Number four, look for support. And number five, be kind to yourself. So number one, rethink your mission. If you haven't already, rethink your mission in light of the possibilities provided by technology. Technology can help you to reach and engage your loyal core audiences, as well as new ones. For people who can't or may never get to your museum, connecting with the museum digitally can be the next best thing. Technology also offers more and different ways of presenting and interpreting your collections, both on-site and online. I'll illustrate with some examples. Social media and video are obvious and useful tools at your disposal. While hardly new technologies, they can be used innovatively to great effect. For the library people in the room, this delightful tweet was recently brought to my attention. I don't know if you can read it, and I may have trouble with my glasses, but basically, the books are lined up to mirror the lyrics from Sting's song, Every Breath You Take. So the first book is Every Breath You Take, the second book is Every Move You Make, the third book is, you know, Help Me Out Here, and the last book is I'll Be Watching You. So they had them all in their library and, you know, put them up and sent the tweet. Now, this tweet came from the Orkney Library. And while it's not likely that I'll get to the Orkney Library anytime soon, because it's the blue balloon at the far right of the map, and I live at the Blue Balloon at the far left of the map. The Orkney Library is now on my radar because of that tweet. It was shared around, and it sort of, you know, caught people's attention. And I've just shared it all with you, with all of you. So, you know, that's got to be a good thing. Now you've all heard of the Orkney Library. There was also a really lively Twitter war between London's Natural History and Science Museums for Ask a Curator Day last fall. Some of you may be familiar with it already. The text says, who would win in a staff battle between the Science Museum and the Natural History Museum London? What exhibit items would help you to be victorious? So Natural History tweets, we have dinosaurs, no contest. The Science Museum replies, London is full of old fossils, but we have robots, a Spitfire, and ancient poisons. Boom. And this went on through many tweets for the course of the day. It got sillier and sillier, but it really attracted a lot of attention, and there was widespread engagement around this Ask a Curator Day. Here's the, oh my God, is it actually going to play? It was embedded. That's so exciting. We had a lot of trouble with this morning. So I'm just going to show you a little snip of an amazing time-lapse video from the Chicago Botanic Garden, which shows its rare corpse flower blooming over a 24-hour period after growing for more than 11 years. Is it going to work? So that is essentially, yeah, it gets a little sad and wilty at the end. And you know, the music is obviously a powerful part of that. I knew, I should have waited that would get that kind of a reaction. So, and I'm sure you don't all have corpse flowers at your institutions, and it also takes 11 years for them to bloom, but you kind of get my drift about featuring a key piece of your collection on social media. Closer to home, I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with the sea otter camera at the Vancouver Aquarium, which keeps viewers enthralled on the aquarium's website and through social media. It takes a while to load, and I'm sure lots of you are familiar with it, so I won't go through that. But what all of these examples have in common is an innovative use of technology to communicate with audiences around museum collections and to build community. In the social media examples, having a voice and a sense of humor are also key. And in each case, the net result is a positive impression of the museum. Digital products like virtual exhibits and tours and websites can also use technology in innovative ways. The virtual tour of the Potlatch Gallery at the UMISTA Cultural Society is part of their larger virtual exhibit. It lets you explore the gallery spaces and zoom in on key objects. Text, videos of the objects in use and audio recordings, amongst other things, enhance the experience. Have many of you had a chance to visit this site? A few. So I will endeavor to walk you through it very, very quickly. So the virtual tour allows you to navigate. And it's not, it's, I'm doing it on my screen, but you can't see it, so maybe it's not mirroring. Okay.
I we got so to get lit up. A hamas. A hitla lit lach is healy last nachus. I got my portrait on a man. I'm skits a hill at
all.
Nearly diet.
It's okay.
I do in Sinati. I feel like Cascus.
I won't put you through it. It can be a pain to stand to sit while someone else mouses around a website. There's really nothing more irritating. So I won't do that to you. I will move on to the event. Actually, just to speak very quickly about the UMISTA project, you're able to navigate with your mouse. It's fully responsive and accessible. You can zoom in on objects in the collection and click on them, and they load, and then you can rotate them through 360 degrees and sort of super zoom right in on how they're made. So you can actually go into the mouth of the mask and see the mechanics of how it's made. And you can navigate around the galleries pretty easily. And there are lots of other rich layers in the experience, but it's a very good example of what a virtual tour can do. The Van Gogh Museum uses technology to great effect on its website, and it lets you get right up close to the paint layer using the same sort of zoom technology, so you can see and feel the artist's color and brushwork, which is obviously not something you can do with the real artworks in the museum. I know I just said I wouldn't mouse. This should be much easier. So, it's not mirroring. Is it over here? Do I slide it over? Yeah, I'm doing that. Screens at work, so they kind of, you know, just turn my head. So we should be able, using the zoomer, to zoom right in there, get, you know, very close to the canvas layer, and to see how that will apply the color and its brush. So that is a nice feature on that exhibit, or on that website. Visitors about the nature and significance of the Skolets' knowledge and cultural heritage. A beautiful website to visit. I would encourage you to spend some time on it. Each of these examples uses technology to deepen the experience of the collections, histories, and stories presented. The second way that museums can approach innovation and technology so they can keep moving in the right direction is number two, see what others are doing. Broaden your understanding of technology and what it can offer you by studying the many examples available from large and small institutions, and use them to inspire you to try something new. A big challenge, of course, is finding the examples. There are several easy and free ways of keeping abreast of developments in technology in museums, and they don't have to take a lot of time. A quick scan a couple of times a week, and a deeper read or conversation now and then, will go a long way to helping you feel more informed and confident about digital. Tip number one for finding examples of digital projects is sign up for newsletters, listservs, groups, and blogs. These are a very select few of the ones that I enjoy. The Museletter for Museums and the Web is an international, the Museums and the Web community is an international community of professionals who share exemplary research and practice in digital culture and heritage. The Museums Association News from the UK is a mix of things. It's not all digital, but there are some really good digital bits. And there are regular updates on the UK Ministry's Culture is Digital initiative, which is something that is good to familiarize yourself with. The Digital Snapshot by the Audience Agency is full of news and useful articles, tips, and good reads from, again, a UK agency. And BOAG World by Paul BOAG is an interesting newsletter. He's a consultant and expert in digital transformation. For listservs, I follow the museum's computer group, and the PHI Center in Montreal does innovative stuff around digital. And the Museum Computer Network has an active group on LinkedIn, as do several of the other organizations I've already mentioned, like the UK Museums Association and the American Alliance of Museums. And a blog that I enjoy, and there are lots that I look at, but this is one I come back to over the years, is Museum 2.0 by Nina Simon. Again, not all digital, but some cool stuff, and some, you know, she's a big thinker in the museum field. The second tip for finding examples of digital projects is look at award winners and conference proceedings. This theory and practice is what the field, anyway, thinks is worth our attention and their recognition. So I try to keep up with the GLAMMY Awards, that should be lowercase I, my apologies to Museums and the Web. I also keep track of the Museums and the Web Bibliography, which is an incredibly rich resource comprising all the papers published on Museums and the Web conference websites or in annual selected proceedings since 1997. The American Alliance of Museums Media and Technology Muse Awards are also good ones to follow. The UK has the Museums and Heritage Awards, not all digital, but there's a digital stream. And the International Design Communications Awards, awards are other good ones. And then just for fun, the Webby Awards honor the best of the internet. You're gonna find Taylor Swift videos in there and, you know, NPR stuff, but there is still a good sort of cultural blend in the Webby Awards. Tip number three for finding examples to inspire you is know your way around a few key publications. You know, there could have been dozens of candidates for this little tip, but I chose two. The now shuttered New Media Consortium published the Horizon Report Museum Edition for several years earlier this decade. It was the go-to resource for where the field thought it was going in terms of digital. The last edition that was released in 2016 is still packed with useful trends and examples. And Trends Watch from the American Alliance of Museums Center for the Future of Museums is still going strong. It's broader than straight digital, but it's a quick read and interesting context for our work. I'm sure you, like I, have more of your favorite publications, but these two have been particularly resonant in my practice. I threw in another one on the plane yesterday, Digital Adaptation by Paul Boag, who I've also mentioned earlier, Boag World, is a great, it's a book, and it's useful when you're thinking about organizational change around digital. So that title is Digital Adaptation by Paul Boag. The fourth and final tip for finding examples is a really obvious one, talk to people. If you come across a project you'd like to learn more about, arrange to speak with the person responsible for it. I find that Skype or a phone call work best, and I've been on the instigating and the receiving end of many of these conversations over the years, and they have shaped my thinking and my practice immeasurably. You can also, of course, leverage the expertise and experience in your local GLAM network. Keep in touch with colleagues who are interested in digital. Maybe even start a regular meetup to exchange information and ideas. The takeaway here is be curious and make connections. By making these activities part of my work routine, I've learned a lot about many innovative and inspiring digital projects. So I'd like to touch on five projects from the past few years that have made a big impact in the GLAM world. I've experienced three of them in person, and I sent my intrepid husband to try out the fourth one. When it launched in 2010, the Explorer app at the American Museum of Natural History was the first example of indoor GPS in a museum. It was designed to solve the problem of navigation in a complex building. The app knows your location, gives you step-by-step instructions to go where you want to go, and delivers content on the exhibits along the way. It also features tours, a newer augmented reality experience, quizzes, sharing opportunities, and more. In 2012, Gallery One opened, and the Art Lens app launched at the Cleveland Museum of Art. The technology and interpretation were designed to inspire all visitors to explore the museum's permanent collection. At the time, the 40-foot collection wall in Gallery One that you see in the slide was the largest multi-touch micro-tile screen in the US. Gallery One featured 10 interactives, the collection wall, 3 interactives designed for children, and 6 displays or lenses. A museum-wide app called ArtLens used iBeacon technology and augmented reality to orient visitors and deliver content on the collections. Both the physical spaces and the app were enhanced and relaunched in 2016 and 2017. In 2015, the Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum launched its now iconic pen. It was designed as a technological way for visitors to learn about design by engaging with the works on view in the museum and by designing themselves. The pen lets you collect and save objects from around the galleries, explore the digitized collection, sketch your own designs, and more. Launched in 2016 with an enhanced version the following year, the Lost Palace Experience by Historic Royal Palaces brings lost buildings and historical events to life using immersive technologies. Professional storytellers tell the history of Whitehall Palace, which once stood at the heart of downtown London. Audio content is triggered by proximity to architectural features installed on the streets. And visitors hold a sculptural form that houses a hacked smartphone and haptic technology. Importantly, there are no screens to distract from the experience. My husband, who is an English teacher, loved it. Launched in 2017, Tate Modern's Modigliani VR, The Ochre Atelier, immerses visitors in a virtual reality recreation of the artist Modigliani's final studio. The experience was offered in a space adjacent to a Modigliani exhibit at the museum, and a transcript of the audio is available online. This experience immersed visitors in an environment they would not otherwise have been able to visit. So these are obviously really big examples, and one could infer probably quite expensive examples. So you might ask, how are they relevant to your work? What can we learn from them? As it turns out, there are some useful and scalable lessons here. Each project solved a visitor-centered problem or met a visitor-centered challenge or opportunity, which was often to do with access and engagement. Each project teamed up a range of experts from the glam sector and the creative industries to get the job done. Each project used technology in new ways, not necessarily new technologies. Each project team shared their results, and most of the projects were enhanced in subsequent years based on visitor feedback. This approach of keeping visitors at the heart of your decision-making, collaborating with others, choosing the right technology to achieve your visitor experience goals, using it creatively, sharing results, and improving through evaluation is a good approach, and it's a good place to start as you think about innovating with technology. This brings us to the third way that museums can approach innovation and technology so that they can keep moving in the right direction. Start small and aim for innovations that are the right size for you. Few of us have the mandate or the resources to pull off a Cleveland Museum of Art scale project. But there are lots of other ways you can start to introduce technology into your work to engage visitors and to keep building your digital skills and confidence. 2 years ago, at the BCMA conference, John, who is over here, at Craig Darrick Castle in Victoria, presented the castle's experiences developing an on-site audio tour with augmented reality. The project was designed to address the challenge of serving up content in small spaces and to help the castle build credibility as a museum. They started out with a big wish list, but their development partner advised that they phase the project. They should start small, get some data, and then build on it. Since that time, the castle has made some improvements to the tour based on visitor feedback, and they're about to embark on defining what phase two of the tour will look like and how they can incorporate it into their new visitor center and galleries. Scalability is a key concept in this project. For their online exhibit on the First World War, the rooms in St. John's thought outside the box for their virtual tour, showcasing the physical exhibit on the same subject. The curator had seen a virtual house tour done for a realtor by a local company. The company was looking to expand their business, and they liked the rooms project. So they photographed the physical exhibit and delivered a tour with over 250 hotspots for less than $500. By contrast, drone footage of the museum's exterior cost them a fortune. And with a $25 viewer from Walmart, visitors to the online exhibit experienced the tour in 3D. Collaborating with service providers in your community and repurposing a technology for a different context are key concepts in this project. The Arnold's Cove Heritage Foundation in Newfoundland and Labrador developed an app to share the stories of the resettlement of the Placentia Bay Islands communities and to boost tourism to the area. The app features a map of Arnold's Cove and identifies the more than 100 houses that were floated into the community. On site, the app is triggered by GPS, allowing visitors to stroll the resettlement walk at their own pace and hear sounds and stories about each location as they walk. Users can also access the material off-site through the app, and this dual access is a key concept in this project. In Annapolis County in Nova Scotia, an independent, not-for-profit organization of volunteers with an interest in collecting the archival assets of the county partnered with a local college to produce an online community mapping project. Students trained the volunteers on scanning and digitization, and then the volunteers decided what to map. There are 13 maps and counting on the Map Annapolis website, and I'm just going to say it again because it's so much fun, Map Annapolis. Intergenerational learning and sharing resources are key concepts in this project. In their not yet launched new virtual exhibit, Hanging Out, La Boîte Rouge Vif and Indigenous youth from five Quebec communities use immersive 360 video to invite visitors into significant life moments and cultural activities in the youth's lives. Filmed with six GoPro spherical cameras and in 3D audio, users can navigate and explore these special places and events at their leisure. Co-creation with communities is a key concept in this project. Each of these examples used technology in a way that made sense for the organization in terms of their capacity and their goals. Apart from the key concepts I highlighted for each project, all the projects share a commitment to visitors, a spirit of experimentation, a collaborative approach, and a sense of pride at what they were able to accomplish. This brings us to the fourth way that museums can approach innovation and technology so that they can keep moving in the right direction. Look for support. There is support available to help you undertake technology projects so that you can build your digital capacity and confidence. The main types of support I'll touch on are funding, collaboration, and sharing resources. I'll also mention standards. In terms of funding, the Virtual Museum of Canada Investment Program is an obvious source. There are papers on your tables. The Documentary Heritage Communities Program, run by Library and Archives Canada, supports the development of Canada's local archival and library communities, and museums are part of that if they have an archive, by increasing their capacity to preserve, provide access to, and promote local documentary heritage. The Museum's Assistance Program supports heritage institutions and workers in the preservation and presentation of heritage collections in Canada. The Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council's Partnership Engage grants support short-term partnered research activities involving a post-secondary institution and a single organization from the public, private, or not-for-profit sectors. At the provincial, territorial, regional, and municipal levels, other types of funding are also available. Funds can also be secured, of course, through donors and sponsors, and many initiatives and projects have been realized with this kind of support. Collaboration is another powerful way for you to develop digitally. One of the things we look at when we're evaluating proposals at the Virtual Museum of Canada is the quality of the partnerships supporting the project. Partners from other museums and heritage organizations, post-secondary institutions, the local community, and the creative industries can bring different expertise and perspectives to the table that challenge your thinking, push the creative process, and result in a stronger product. And good partnerships can last across multiple years and multiple projects. In terms of sharing resources, last year we researched makerspaces across Canada to see what kinds of equipment and expertise might be available locally for small museums and heritage organizations to tap into. We found 46 labs, hubs, and spaces, with new ones being added all the time. Many of these spaces are at public libraries, and they provide access to things like 3D printers and scanners, audio and video production tools, green screen technology, iPads and laptops, and Google Cardboard. Classes, workshops, events, idea jams, and informal meetups are also integral to many of these spaces, which are fundamentally about sharing digital tools and digital knowledge. Of course, expertise and equipment can also be shared less formally among organizations with similar goals. Finally, while standards can't teach you how to work with technology, they can provide a helpful framework. Last month, the Government of Canada released its new digital standards. These standards, which will evolve over time, form the foundation of the government's shift to becoming more agile, open, and user-focused. None of us is running a government, but the standards are general enough to be useful to the GLAM sector. Practices like design with users, iterate and improve frequently, build in accessibility from the start, and collaborate widely can help you to avoid pitfalls and mistakes that can stand in the way of innovation. The fifth and final way I'll speak about that museums can approach innovation and technology so that they can keep moving in the right direction is be kind to yourself. Building your digital capacity is a process. There will be setbacks, things you think you could have done better. There may even be failures. But ultimately, it's about learning with each effort so that you can approach the next opportunity with more skills and greater confidence. Keep in mind that trying and failing are key characteristics of the digital era. Google does this all the time. In fact, they have a formal process in place for documenting and learning from their mistakes. It's called, not surprisingly, the postmortem, and is designed to do three things. Number one, encourage blameless and constructive feedback. Number two, focus on improvement and resilience. And number three, promote an iterative and collaborative process. Google even provides a downloadable template for conducting your own postmortem exercise. It's only 2 pages, and it can be adapted to your needs. I particularly like the question that they ask, where did we get lucky? This learn from failure mindset is a good one to adopt, but you have to make the time to reflect and to have the discussion so that you can learn, grow, and try new things. I'd like to say one last thing about being kind to yourself and approaching technology and innovation with the right attitude. By your very nature as museums and heritage organizations, you are in a position of great strength. You have fascinating collections and stories and interesting sites to bring to life. You represent the complex and nuanced stories of this land and its peoples, past and present, and how these stories relate to the wider world. A close colleague recently commented to me that technology companies would love to get their hands on content as rich as ours to showcase their innovations, which in fact sounds like an opportunity to collaborate. So I'll wrap up. To recap, there are gaps in the digital skills and literacies of the museum sector worldwide, and there is work to be done. The good news is that a wide range of initiatives and projects is being undertaken, and the field is increasingly aware of and moving towards where it needs to be digitally. People are diving into digital in a whole wide variety of ways, and some with great results, with some great results. And they are learning by doing. As for how to keep building our digital skills and literacies, and how to innovate in this environment, I propose that you think of innovation more broadly as something that is new for your museum or for the wider field. And to get or to keep you going in the right direction, you can do 5 things. Rethink your mission, see what others are doing, start small and right-size it, look for support, and be kind to yourself. There are some complex challenges and exciting opportunities ahead, and I'm confident that by remembering the visitors we serve, by working together, and by approaching technology with a spirit of experimentation and innovation, we will help to position our institutions to survive and thrive in changing times. Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to the BCMA podcast. Many thanks to Megan Richardson and everyone who attended the conference last year. That's all the time we have for this month, but we'll be back soon with a fresh new podcast talking to some recipients from the Canada 150 grant program. We hope you'll get excited about that, but in the meantime, please subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play and listen to past episodes on the BCMA website, museumsassn.bc.ca. The BC Museum Association receives operational support from the BC Arts Council. We also gratefully acknowledge the support of the Royal BC Museum in providing a home for the BCMA Secretariat. The BCMA Secretariat is located on the traditional lands of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations.